Hello and welcome to You Just Got Homeschooled. I'm RJ, and today I want to go over just a little bit of stuff I've been reading recently about the history of education and in the United States in particular. But I think it's a little bit telling, especially given what we're seeing today with COVID-19 and how the United States has shut down and the world has kind of shut down and what it's done to education. And it just kind of, as I was reading it, it just struck me how strange the reality of compulsory public education has been in the United States. So this one shouldn't be very long, but hopefully it'll be informative. And I'm sorry that I've been gone so long. End of the school year, COVID-19, all that stuff, children, tax season being extended, all of those things are all at play since my wife is a tax preparer. But I just wanted to go over this real quick because it's been kind of been on my mind rolling around for a bit. So what I learned as I was reading this book, the book is Dumbing Us Down, and I'm forgetting the author at the moment, but basically he was explaining the history of public education, compulsory public education in the United States. And he brings up the fact that basically compulsory public education was not a thing until around 1850, and it started in Massachusetts. And it was pretty strongly resisted by certain patches or certain populations within Massachusetts, to the point where the last part or the last community in Massachusetts that eventually became or succumbed to compulsory public education didn't do so until 1880, so 30 years later. And it took, in multiple cases, the militia to be called up, which is, if you don't know what a militia is, it's a bunch of armed citizenry. Think about the Revolutionary War, American Revolutionary War, where you have Minutemen, so regular everyday citizens who have their firearms. And it took the militia basically forcing those communities into compliance with this compulsory public education. I thought that was just, that blew my mind. The fact that it took armed men to convince these families that they needed to hand over their children to the public institutions. And so they finally did. And what was interesting is, and he was quoting Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy in a report, I think, senator, who gave it, basically said that prior to the public education system, the literacy rate, which meaning the number of people who can read in the society of adults, obviously, was 98% prior to public education. But following compulsory public education, it dropped to 91%. So basically, the public education system had a 7 out of 10% higher failure rate than the private or the homeschool education. Now, granted, Massachusetts, because it had a high Puritan population from, you know, colonialism, had versions of public education before that, but they were more like collective education. We might name them something like a co-op rather than compulsory, you have to go to our school type of thing. The other thing he brought up that I thought was interesting was that the birth of our education system was actually birthed by a couple of professors, I think one from Columbia and the other one maybe from Harvard. I'd have to go back and check to be sure. But basically, they created the public education system by basically applying scientific methods, quote unquote scientific methods, to the management of people. This is during the age of industrialization, so it's early late 1800s, early 1900s, called the Gilded Age, oftentimes in history circles. But it's scientific management. How do we get more out of people, and how do we make them predictable and reliable? Basically like machines. And that's what's happened. If we look at our education system, that's what it is. The goal is to make carbon copies of people as best as they can. And then we look at what you're good at, maybe, if we're lucky, we look at what you're good at and kind of peg you into a particular machine that fits that need. So if you're good at math and science, then we'll put you into this kind of field. And if you're good at you know, English and history will put you at this kind of field. And if you're good at this and that, we'll put you in this kind of field. But ultimately, it's just a channeling and trying to make people predictable, regimented, able to be governed by bells and whistles, for lack of a better example. And I thought that was really interesting because it exposes, to me at least, kind of the seedy underbelly of public education, which is that the goal is not to create well-rounded, ethical, moral, holistic, thinking people. The goal is to create cogs to fit into the machines, and we're going to use quote-unquote science in order to do that. And that's a problem for us as a society, because he then goes on to note in his book, Dumbing Us Down, again, I have to go look at the name of the author, but he goes in to note that the most successful people are the people who don't stay in that system, who think outside the box, who are creative, that don't have that all beat out of them. And I say beat because that's what I've experienced. I've experienced it as a student, and I've experienced it as a teacher, where there are systems in place. There are realities of public education that are just not commiserate with actual learning. It's not that you cannot learn in a public education system. I did. I went, you know, kindergarten through 12th grade in public school, save for like a 3-month stint where I was homeschooled. But the number of teachers I ran into that would not have conversations about things that were marginally outside of their field, or would not answer questions because they didn't find them relevant, that would not follow a rabbit trail that was interesting and had the class engaged because it wasn't part of the curriculum, is high. I would sub in classes at one of my jobs, where I would go next door and sub for her because she wasn't feeling well or sick or whatever else. And it was a ethics class. And I'd get there and they'd be working on projects and stuff like that. And I'd walk around and talk to the students. And they would be like, oh, you know, and I'm like, well, what about this? And they're like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. You know, so-and-so told me that that's the answer. And so the entire project they're working on for weeks was basically finding a way to say what the teacher had told them to say. And I loved her as a person. She was a great person. She was a great help to me as I was a brand new teacher. But at the same time, it just blew my mind that instead of walking around asking questions and forcing the kids to think, to practice thinking, and to give reasons for what they thought, she kind of told them what to think and then gave them the task of making a presentation that does that, that explains her thought process, and wouldn't allow for questioning or thinking outside the box to any great extent, because it always came back to, you know, but this is the answer. And that may be true. There may, you know, like, it's okay. There are some fields and some things where there is just one answer. But to destroy the thinking process and the process of learning, really, by just shutting it down, and not allowing the circuitous route to get there, to get to that answer. And I think that's really what's important. I think in education, in learning, I should say, it's really about developing a feel for the material. And the best way I have to describe it, and I've probably used this analogy before, is like holding it in your hands. Whatever the concept, the idea, the practice, if you've ever played baseball or something like that, right? Whatever, choose your sport, especially a sport with some sort of physical object that you have to handle regularly. If you've played baseball for a long period of time or softball, you develop a familiarity with the accoutrements of playing that sport. And so in the beginning, a glove may feel awkward, or a ball may feel awkward, or you may not be able to throw it correctly. But as you practice, as you use it, as you handle it, it gets to the point where it becomes second nature, where you automatically, without thinking about it, pull your gloved hand up to catch the ball and transfer it without thinking or really looking to your throwing arm, and then throw the ball wherever it needs to go. And you never have to see the ball after you've grabbed it out of the air, because you're familiar with it. You're familiar with the movements. You're familiar with the physics of how the ball flies and how it bounces, right? You're familiar with positioning yourself underneath it in order to catch it if it's up in the air, all those type of things. And the same thing goes with education, with ideas, with thought processes, with just thinking in general. The more you practice them, the better you get. And the more you handle them, the more you practice them, the more you're actually able to create shortcuts that you've kind of ingrained inside of your brain and your body to some degree, the habits that make you effective and productive in that field. And this is why you see a couple of things in education, or at least, you know, like really outstanding educators or really outstanding students, is that when they really get it, they often skip over huge amounts of material. Maybe not like physically laid out, but like in the process of them learning, because they know it so well that they just kind of intuit the answer and they intuit correctly. And it's actually hard for them to backtrack to get stuff right. Now, we see this in math, and that's not always good, but because you need to know how to backtrack and say, like, let me show you what I did. But that's also a learning process. But you can have, in fact, there's a story from my family where my grandfather was a carpenter, and engineers would occasionally find stuff that they couldn't figure out how to do. Like they could envision what they wanted done, but they didn't know how to draw it out or how to make it happen in the real world. And they'd give it to him, and him being a carpenter, he would slap it together, basically. Kind of complex joinery or things like that. Like they could conceptualize the idea, but they didn't know how to make it practically work. And so they go to him, who's a master carpenter, and he would be able to do it. And I think that's the same thing with any ideology, any thought process, any thinking pattern, any form of education. You have to practice with it, and then you get it, and it becomes ingrained. This is exactly what happens when you see like musicians, really good musicians. They can freestyle. They know how to do the stuff from the basic all the way up. But then because they have kind of the rules and the policies and the thought processes ingrained into almost muscle memory, they're able to then move forward without having to be a slave to a particular set of things. So I think that our education system is backwards. The system is rigged to make cogs for machines. Your cog might be a cashier or a logistics person or, you know, a scientist who, you know, researches something, or a engineer who builds something, or a doctor who fixes someone. But then there's another category of people, and these are the ones we often find ourselves admiring. You know, maybe not admiring like they're a great person, but admiring in a, they've done a lot of things, right? And they seem to be good at them. And, or they've come up with creative solutions. And this is where I think it's a little interesting. I remember watching a TED talk by a guy whose son got cancer, and he was a computer engineer. He's like, I'm not a doctor. I don't know how to do that kind of thing, but I do know how to create AI, right? Artificial intelligence. And so what he ended up doing is creating an AI, a machine learning program, basically, that allowed the AI was able to take existing lists of medications and run kind of analysis to figure out which ones might be promising as treatments for his son, because the kind of cancer his son had did not have any current treatments. And he was able to pull up like 50 or something like that, where they were able to then find existing drugs that may help his son. And it's because he was able to make the leap mentally. I don't know physiology of cancer patients, but I do know how to get a machine to sort stuff for me and to run things much faster than I can run them. And so he combined the two, partly because of need, and found a way to create something that benefited everyone else. You get your people like Leonardo da Vinci, who is just a mastermind, but it's this integration. It's a combination of studying, looking at the world, and then pulling that down. And so when we reduce people like these professors did, who created the public education system functionally, or the outline for it, to a scientific method, quote unquote, this is why we have all the metrics in public education, the state testing, the STAR testing, all these different things. The grading system is in theory about mastery and acquiring knowledge and skills and all that stuff. But in all reality, it's about measuring how is the business doing at creating the cogs. and we're measuring the cogs based on these test scores, right? If you ever watch, like, you know, picture from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and they're going, they're manufacturing something, there's always that person whose job it is to pull out those ones that aren't doing well, right? The things that are misshapen or off specs. And our society has determined, our public school system has determined, that if you score X and Y, you are this grade, right? You're this grade of material. So you might have the high-end, you know, jeans that are all sewn perfectly, and then you have the middle grade ones, which are a little bit off, but you probably won't notice. And then you have the low grade ones, which they're beginning to see issues, but if you're not looking too carefully, you're just wearing them outside in the garden. And then you have the ones that are just like, they need to be recycled, right? That's how our system works. And testing is how we measure it. And when we reduce people to that, we've got a problem, because maybe they weren't meant to be a pair of pants, right? Like, maybe the issue is that we're trying to measure everyone on the same, in the same way, and that's not really fair, because we're not the same, not anywhere close, right? Every single person is different, and that's a good thing, and it's a beneficial thing. And I am so glad that there are mechanics, and there are engineers, and there are doctors, and there are chiropractors, and there are artists, and there are musicians, because they all benefit us. And the problem is our system doesn't recognize that. And so when we reduce all of humanity down to a scientific, you know, stamp of grade, grade A, grade B, grade C, grade D, grade F, right? We not only don't do service to those people, we also don't do service to ourselves. Because maybe that F student is struggling with dyslexia or just doesn't have a good grasp of numbers, but you give him a wrench, or you give him a hammer, or you give him a paintbrush or a guitar, and they will change the world. But instead, we've labeled them an F because they didn't meet our standards the way that we want them to. And in the process, we teach them how to be a cog in a machine they don't fit in. And we destroy their ability to believe in themselves. And we're lucky if they end up just being, you know, a grocery store bagger rather than going and doing something much worse for them and for society, ending up living on the streets or doing drugs or, you know, all those types of things. And so I just want you to kind of think about that, as I've been thinking about it myself, been like, this is a ridiculous system. And we keep playing into it. Meanwhile, COVID-19 has revealed a bunch of it. Right, a bunch of the ridiculousness of the system, because a disease happens and all of a sudden state tests don't matter. A disease happens and all of a sudden it's okay if your kids didn't learn for half a year, or we didn't teach them for half a year. Right, it's okay that, you know, we just let those kids go to college whether or not they know the material. It's not that big a deal. Right, and so. It has revealed a lot of the seedy underbelly, I think, because you really can get an entire school day done in an hour and a half or 2 hours in many cases. You really can teach kids on the fly when they're interested rather than fighting against them and trying to force them into a box. So I hope you like this episode. Please like, subscribe, hit the buttons, do the things, share with a friend. And thank you for listening. Have a great day.